Dr. Leah Katz, thank you so much for being here. Dr. Katz is a psychologist in private practice, a speaker and multimedia contributor, and she is the author of Gutsy, which teaches readers how to take an honest look at what might be holding them back from living their most authentic life and how to apply mindfulness concepts that can help them access new joy and freedom. I've known Dr. Leah for several years for purposes of full disclosure. She has been instrumental in my research into workplace bullying, and she's a friend. Leah, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. All right. Great to see you.
It's good to see you too. Thanks for having me, Andy. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. So much to talk about. We've had conversations over the years, and you've been so helpful to me, as I mentioned. But let's talk about this. While childhood and adult bullying is not the primary focus of your work and your practice, it is a focus. You've written about bullying, and like many others who have an interest in the topic, you were a bully target yourself. Can you talk a little bit about when that happened and how it manifested itself?
Sure. Yeah. And that's actually what propelled me to start writing about bullying on Psychology Today a few years ago when we first connected.
Right.
So my story with bullying didn't start when I was a child. You know, childhood was thankfully bully free, other than, you know, just normal misses with friends and stuff like that. When I was in graduate school, I had a really difficult incident with a supervisor, someone who was higher up in one of the placements that I had through the trainings that I had to do. And it was the first time that I experienced something like that. And it was confusing. It was hard. It really got me in my head because, as I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about with bullying, you start to question your own judgment, you know, and you start to feel ashamed about what's happening. And so that was a really pivotal experience for me. Thankfully, I had support at the time and I had a therapist at the time who helped me work through it. And I think that that helped set me up for dealing with some more minor bullying that happened to me a little bit later on in my career. But yeah, I've been there and it's tough.
Yeah. And so in my experience, you know, I chose as a career live television for the most part, but television production in New York. And I've said this before, but my feeling was, hey, I asked for it. This is a high tension environment, a lot of pressure, and that's what happens. Acrimony occurs in those circumstances. And I've come to find that it happens in every discipline, especially education, where you experienced it. So let me ask this. How did it come about? In other words, was it belittling talk? Was it talking behind your back? Was it somebody trying to keep you down? What was the actual bullying like for you?
Yeah, in my case, it was really insidious, which made it so, and it, as it is for a lot of people, but it made it so hard to deal with and so hard to even talk about and put my finger on. And it kind of went like, it wasn't really directly to my face, but it was a lot of someone who was in a much higher position than me talking to other peers of mine in the same placement and saying things like, oh, I would want to stay away from this person, or you know, when it came for reviews at the end of the semester, when this person had to talk to teachers of mine in graduate school, saying things that were actually like blatantly false. And so affected my grade in the class, even though I was working really hard. And it seemed like from this initial decision that this individual made, for whatever reason it was, and it's still a mystery to me, that I was going to be their target, it just followed me the whole entire year. There was nothing I can do. I couldn't work hard enough. I couldn't advocate enough to the teachers of mine. There was nothing I can do to get it to stop, basically. So it was just about getting my support and figuring out how I was going to cope with it.
Yeah. And it sounds like you did a good job of coping to the extent of finding some help. So many of us feel so alone, and I'm sure you felt alone too going through that, but at least you found an outlet to get some help.
Yeah.
And it is so difficult. You don't understand. And in my case, it happened over many years, different bully bosses throughout. They seem to find me. And that's what I want to ask, because in doing this summit and interviewing so many people, and you're as good an example as any, you're so accomplished and confident. And it's hard to believe that you would be somebody who would be bullied. But as I found in my research, and I'd like to think in my own circumstance, it's not how accomplished you are. It's not how much money you make. But if you're not able to find the right coping mechanism, the bully kind of figures out that they can continue to act in that manner.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And I think that is just such an important thing to underline over and over again, that if you are the target of a bully, it's so easy for you to get in your head and think like, well, what is it about me? There must be something about me that's making them pick on me. Or maybe I don't deserve to be here. Or maybe I really did mess up more than I think I did. And I think the underlining part is it's not you, you know, like a lot of the psychology behind it and the dynamic, as you were talking about before, where bullies choose their targets. And usually it's people who are not at, you know, who won't advocate for themselves, who are not assertive. And it's not about you. And that is a really important thing to internalize, because it's so easy and it's so quick to go there.
Yeah. And as you're talking, because you make it sound simple to the extent of understanding your own self-worth.
Right.
And looking back on it, I see that. I only wish I could have seen that over the many years, and I'm embarrassed to say, I'm almost ashamed to say, decades where I just thought, and you use the term, you know, if I just work better and harder, and I felt like I was always already working very hard and quite effectively.
Yeah.
And that's not the answer to the ill-mannered boss.
Right.
It's not the answer. So
it's not.
Yeah. And I want to get more into that, because your book Gutsy gets into many coping mechanisms about all kinds of circumstances that mm-hmm. apply to this particular topic.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't talked a lot with other people, but I know that you and I have talked about this, that in your case, the bully was a woman. And I'm wondering how that affected you and what, if anything, you can extrapolate from that, given your background in psychology.
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. I think, you know, this was many years ago and I was younger and more naive. And so I think the fact that for me, the bullying was done by a woman was really surprising to me. And I think it made it more confusing. If it had been, it just sort of didn't conform to my understanding of what bullying would look like or should look like, what I had seen it represented in movies and things like that. And like I said, too, this individual was a woman, but she was also someone in the same profession as me. She was someone who was supposed to be a support and someone who did support others, which I think is also important to name. I saw this person being really nice and supportive to other women in the same program that I was in. And I think it just added a confusing element to me.
Yeah. And have you seen that in your practice at all? Because I know you also counsel children, but do you see other women who have been targeted by female bosses?
Yes, but and men too. Honestly, in my clinical experience, it doesn't really discriminate, you know, and I think that's why what you're doing is such a gift to so many people, because it's something that's not talked about enough. I really don't think it discriminates based on gender.
Oh.
And it, like what you were saying before, which I thought was really powerful, there's a lot of shame, even amongst like the two of us talking, right? We both have our own experiences. And as I'm sharing, I notice myself, you know, like sort of wanting to hold back a little bit, because there is, even though it was so long ago and I've really worked through it, there is all that shame that we tend to carry. And so this is good to talk about.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being so open. And that's what I'm trying to do. You know, I've learned so much. I didn't even know it was bullying when I was experiencing it. I just thought, well, it's a tough environment and he's a tough boss. I didn't even know what word or name to put to it, which is why this, and you were one of the first people I spoke to, it's been such a catharsis speaking to people like you who both have the professional experience to help myself and others, but also kind of empathize with what we've all felt.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that there is any connection? Again, I don't know if you've experienced this. And you talked about that you experienced the bullying as a younger person, a grad student. The first experience I had, and I never had any bullying experience as a young person. I was popular in school. I was a three-sport athlete, played an instrument, played the trumpet. I mean, I had really good friends. So it was not even a threat of bullying in my experience. But then I won't go into great detail, but I was bullied in the fraternity that I picked at the University of Illinois. The hazing was bullying, you know, in its worst way. And just like you said, you looked at the boss as somebody who would be a protector in a way, a mentor. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the quote unquote brothers when I went into the fraternity as, these are my best friends, my older brothers. They're going to help me with school, help me with my social life. They put their arms around me. And then they hazed us. And it was awful, but not everybody hated it in my pledge class. Some guys kind of liked it, couldn't wait to do it to the next group. Mm-hmm. And I put a stop to that. I made sure they didn't do it the next year. But my question is, Do you see any connection between the people that might enjoy bullying a freshman in college to what happened to them as kids or the likelihood of them becoming bully bosses later on? I mean, is there a continuum, I guess, is what I'm asking?
So it's one of those things where it's not causation, but there's certainly correlation, you know? So if you have had hard experiences or you have been the victim of being bullied when you were a child, just like we see patterns, you know, victims of abuse, you know, are more likely to repeat. You know, we tend to repeat what we know, what we've experienced until we really learn not to, until we do some heavy lifting and hard work and learn a different way. And so we do see this, you know, a lot of the time that if someone, and definitely not all the time, you know, but if you have had your own experiences being bullied as a child, it makes you more likely to then bully as an adult if you haven't processed the trauma of what that was for you. And I think that in some ways, and this is always so tricky, you know, when we talk about hard things that we're going through with really difficult people, and I work with, you know, people who have had childhood trauma, and we talk about that in therapy a lot. There's this delicate balance between finding some sort of understanding for the person doing the hard stuff. So there's like this compassion of like, oh, wow, you most likely are acting this way because of your own unresolved trauma. And which I think is helpful because it helps depersonalize, get us out of our own personal story, and holding them accountable. Right. So it's like that duality piece. And I think that that's why your question is important. Part of why it's important, because it helps highlight that piece of understanding. Right. Like, OK, that this is. It really helps to depersonalize it. A lot of times people repeat what they've been through.
Yeah. And I only wish I could have gone up to one of my many bullies and said, you know, I think you have a psychological problem. You know, you need help. I don't need that. Not sure that would have worked. But
probably not. Yeah.
You know, anything would have been better than I think the way I handled it. In the wake of COVID and remote work, mm-hmm. Are you hearing any differences in the bullying stories you're hearing in your practice today than 5 or 7 years ago? I'm sure you don't have quantitative data, but
yeah,
you know, I thought incorrectly that when remote work started, that the kind of mistreatment, psychological harassment at work might diminish somewhat because, you know, you're on Zoom, so to speak. But it doesn't seem from the people I'm talking about that it's really diminished in any way.
Yeah, no. And I think from my own anecdotal evidence, it doesn't seem to have changed things. You know, the same sort of behaviors are happening, even if it's virtual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being left out of meetings, being called out in meetings. You know, I hear a lot of those kinds of stories. Yeah.
Yeah. And with that happening, is it harder for people to cope because you can't necessarily walk down the hallway and say, hey, can we talk this over?
I think so. I mean, I think that sort of harkens back to why COVID was so hard for so many of us generally, but then, you know, specifically with bullying, that when we're not connected to people, when we were not connected to people in the workplace, that's just hard generally. We need each other. I mean, we need each other to talk about the hard meeting we had or to vent about the project that's difficult for us. And then if there's some bullying going on, yeah, that would offer support that we didn't get when we were online only. So absolutely, I think so. Yeah.
And I want to go back to something that you mentioned just a couple minutes ago that I'd like to drill down on just a little bit more. Because obviously, if you experience trauma as a young person, that can have an effect either as a target of bullying, if you've been abused, or I suppose if you were bullied yourself by an older brother, by whomever, by a parent, you might be inclined, I suppose you're the expert, you might be inclined to mimic or those kinds of behaviors. You'll let me know. But my question is, and I think you'll find this interesting, I met a woman who said that she had a very dysfunctional family growing up, highly dysfunctional. So when she got into the workforce, I don't know if she really thought about it, and I didn't either, but she looked at it as a second chance family. I had the most functional family, loving parents, great siblings, virtually no dysfunction. I don't think anybody has no dysfunction, but a very traditional, great family, let's say. And yet when I got in the workforce, I kind of thought, well, if I was such a good son, which I was, and I did all the right things, I did my homework, did well on school, played sports, did all the right things, didn't get in trouble, that when I get to the workforce, the same thing will happen. I'll act appropriately, work hard, be productive, treat people well, And so we both came from very different places, but looking for that second chance family. And yet the behaviors that I thought would work as they did as a young person didn't work in the workplace, but we came to the same place. What's your sense of all that in terms of how our upbringing affects how we view the workplace?
Yeah. I mean, I think that what you just painted was a very interesting picture of how, you know, you can have very different upbringings and still be seeking something very similar as adults. And so I think that that's sort of like the content process piece. So like content, like what we see is like the content and like you just, but the process piece is different. So what that means possibly is that if you have different upbringings and different childhoods and you're looking to the workplace as a second family, and then there's bullying that happens, you might deal with that very differently, you know? So, and again, none of this is black and white and there's all kinds of variations here. But if you come from a more intact family and you have come with more coping skills and you know how to advocate and your self-worth is fairly intact, you might deal, and there's a good chance you will deal with what happens to you in the workplace that's hard in a very different way than someone who's coming to the workplace with more trauma and self-worth difficulties, you know? So I think that that's like sort of like the process piece that might look different.
Yeah. I mean, I was just so naive. And then when mm-hmm. I get, you know, and also in my case, and I think this is true for a lot of people, you don't have to be in television. I'm not suggesting that television has anything over anything else. Mm-hmm. I think you can love your job no matter what it is. And in my case, I worked very hard to get to a place where I had my own shows. I created my own shows and I worked so hard to get there.
Yeah.
And I wanted to stay there and see it through that I didn't want to let the bully win. And so I didn't want to quit mm-hmm. or even find another job when I'd worked so hard to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess my point here is that it doesn't matter how much money you make or where you are. It's usually, and of course I needed the paycheck. And so, and the other things from a psychological perspective, I think, is that the boss has so much power over you,
yep.
your well-being, your self-worth, your ability to pay your bills, your ability, at least in my case, to enjoy my home life, right? Because I was always bringing it home. Mm-hmm. So it's an unusual circumstance where I looked at the bully boss as, I want them to love me because I love my work.
You know? Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's healthy, do you?
I mean, I think, yeah, I think that like we have to have boundaries wherever we go and with whomever we're in relationship with, you know, so I think that that's a piece of like the, and this is something I talk a lot about in my writing and in the work that I do, but like this idea of like just like living more consciously. And what that means is like living with your eyes wide open and also doing like the reflection of like, what are my boundaries? How am I going to know when a boundary has been crossed? And then what am I going to do about it? So anything in any form of extreme, like I'm a big believer that extremes are usually like not good places to be. So if we're throwing ourselves 100% fully and completely into our jobs and they're going to be our second family and we've got to get this boss to like us, it's not a good recipe for well-being, you know? So it's wanting to bring ourselves back to balance, find meaning from work, but also have meaning in other places. And also like that piece of like just really knowing what your standards are, what your boundaries are, and what you're going to do if they're crossed. Yeah.
And these are some of the themes that you get into in your book. So let's talk about your book, Gutsy: Mindfulness Practices for Everyday Bravery, which is such a great title. And I read the book when it came out at just the time where I was trying to learn and understand. I found it so helpful. And even though I'm not in the throes of a bullying circumstance anymore, it certainly was helpful to me as I continue my career and my interest in this topic. So what led you to write on this specific topic?
I think the short answer to that is I started meditating 10 years ago, a little bit more now. I went on my first long-ish 7-day meditation retreat, and it changed my life dramatically, you know, and it like set me on this whole different course in my own life that was so much more rewarding and meaningful and autonomous than I had ever experienced before. Like for the first time in my life, I started to really pay attention to what was happening inside of me and how I was really feeling about how I was living my life and what was working for me and what was really not working for me. So the self-awareness and then the mindfulness practice also helped me feel braver. Like I couldn't ignore it, you know, now that I knew it, I couldn't ignore it. And so that's where Gutsy was born. I had been on this mindfulness journey, made a lot of big changes in my own life. And I just wanted to impart the lessons of that book and the mindfulness ideas to help other people get unstuck.
So I want to get into some of those coping mechanisms because you're so clear and concise about them. But I have to go back to your title because I kind of cringe when you talk about everyday bravery, because that's where my shame came. I wasn't brave. I wish I had been, but I just wanted to get over the bullying and I didn't know how, and I wasn't brave. And so let's just talk about it a little bit. How do you incorporate mindfulness practices and then incorporate that into everyday bravery? What are some of the coping mechanisms you talk about?
Yeah.
And let me say this in defense of myself. In defense of myself, I was resilient. I'll give myself. Resilient, but I don't think brave, although I wish I had been. So I'm sorry. I had to put that in there.
No, and I'm glad you swung back around to that, because if you didn't, I was going to.
Okay, because you know my story.
I think what you just named is a part of most of our journeys, in whether it's healing from being bullied or trauma or whatever it is that we're trying to heal from as an adult. I think most often there's this piece of us that like really feels a sense of grief and loss that we didn't know what we know now back then. And I think that's what you were naming before. And I think that a big part of this process and healing with whatever we're healing from requires self-forgiveness, you know? So I wasn't brave yet back then. And I can forgive myself for that because I was younger and I didn't know what I know now. And that's okay. That's humanizing that. Like, that's all of our stories, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not easy to be brave. So can you go into some specifics about if you're in a circumstance where, like even mindfulness, some people might not be even that familiar with the term. Can you go into what mindfulness is and how you can practice it on an everyday basis and how it'll help people cope?
Sure. Yeah, I love talking about mindfulness. So I'd be happy to. So mindfulness, in a nutshell, is learning to be more present for what's happening for you right now in this moment with compassion and trying to let go of judgment. So it's sort of like those two pieces. It's more presence and with this compassionate energy, you know? So I think unless we really have tasted what that feels like, a lot of times we don't really know that way of being is even possible. At least like that was my story. You know, I was a hard worker, an achiever. I was like in my head probably almost like 100% of the time. Like I certainly wasn't being compassionate or nice to myself in the way I was talking to myself and the expectations I had out of myself and how I met failure and all of that stuff. And so when I found mindfulness, it was like I found this whole new room, like this beautiful room that would help me just keep on living the life that like still accomplishing things and pursuing things and the things that were meaningful to me, but with a very different quality, like with this quality of compassion and kindness. And now don't get me wrong. It's not like you start meditating and then all of a sudden you're like self-compassionate all the time, but like, you know that that's possible. You know that there's another way of being and you can slowly build that way of being into your life. And I think that breaking down the concept of mindfulness, you can think about it in like two different ways. There's formal meditation, where you can sit formally and like do some guided meditation, and that can help you sort of experience this idea of like being really present with yourself and staying focused on your senses. And then there's informal meditation, which is also such a beautiful concept to be aware of. And that's not like, we don't need to sit for informal meditation. You can bring a bit of mindfulness into little tasks that you're doing. So take a sip of water and you're thirsty. Slow down just a little bit, just a little bit. Feel the cold water going in your mouth and going down and just sort of how nice that feels. Or you're going for a walk and just pause just for a moment and just like notice the sun on your face. Or you're baking and you just, you know, like smell the smells or feel the dough in your hand. So those are informal practices. And it's a way that we can all start, like even today, just like even right now, if you're listening, you know, like, you bring your awareness to your back in your chair or the bottom of your feet? Like we can always bring our awareness to this moment at any given moment. And I think that's a really cool thing.
Great points. And that's really no matter what you're going through. And of course, some things are more severe than others. Some things like threatening, some are not. Although I think that in the case of what I'm talking about with workplace bullying, you can feel very insecure and unsafe in the work environment. And you may feel like, oh, I won't be able to pay my bills if I get fired. I used to think I'll never get another job. I have to hold on to this one. Mm-hmm. And so let me get a little bit more from you on this self-talk issue, because I probably was my worst bully mm-hmm. in the things I was telling myself, you know, in my head. And so can you talk a little bit about this notion of, I love your idea about separating. So if you're baking, if you're home, you're mm-hmm. walking in the woods, whatever it is, you're reading, is separate yourself from the tension and the anxiety and avoid that self-criticism, which I know I suffer from terribly.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a big one for, I mean, so, so many of us. Me too. It's been a big piece of my own journey, like working with that narrative, the self-narrative. And so I would say, I think to answer or address what you're bringing up right now, yeah. And this is like a common, I think, like sort of just like tweak that needs to happen. It's less about getting rid of it, at least to start, okay. And more about noticing it. It's just noticing how your brain is working and how you're talking to yourself, and then being able to let it go. So it's not like, because I think a lot of times we make this mistake, and I know it sounds nuanced, but we feel like, well, I have to get rid of it. Like I can't talk that way to myself. But when we do that, it almost gets louder. It's like, I'm not going away. I'm not going, you know, I'm not going anywhere. That, you know, but if we start to just slow down, notice how we're talking to it, notice how we're talking to ourselves, and then see if we can just like, you know, there's some really nice analogies, like let the thoughts go, like watching the clouds passing in the sky, or like, you know, the leaves just flowing down a river. Can we just notice the thoughts and just kind of let them go, let them like not buy into them as much as we had been?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to work on my self-talk, but I have to tell you that every time I talk to you, I benefit from it and I feel better. So I want to thank you so much.
That's nice. Thank you. And likewise, I really enjoy our chats too.
Thank you. This has been so engaging, helpful, and informative. And I know everybody listening and watching will benefit from your insights. And get the book Gutsy, I'm telling you. The kind of simple, understandable advice that you can incorporate into your life immediately. It's really been helpful to me. So thank you. And Dr. Leah, how can people contact you for more information about your work and your practice?
Sure. My website is drleahkatz.com. So you can find me there. And I also post pretty much daily on Instagram. I have an Instagram platform at Dr. Leah Katz. It's Dr. period. And then my name, LEAHKATZ. And I talk a lot about the concepts that we talked about today. I talk about healing and mindfulness and yeah, that's where I am.
And I love your social media. I enjoy it very much. And I'm clicking
you.
And I'm liking because it's really terrific.
Thank you so much.
Final word from me, bully targets and those of you in toxic work environments, let's aim to change the workplace for good. Thanks for watching.